Lee Boyd Malvo has won a change of venue, and his trial is being moved from Fairfax County to the city of Chesapeake, Virginia. Malvo is to be tried for the murder of 47-year-old FBI analyst Linda Franklin, who was shot to death in Falls Church. Malvo and John Allen Muhammad are also charged in several other slayings in the region. Three people are dead and five others are wounded after a man went on a shooting spree at a Jefferson City, Missouri manufacturing plant. The gunman, a worker at the plant, apparently killed himself after a shootout with police. The shooter was due to start his shift when he opened fire. Israel has completed its handover of Bethlehem to Palestinian police. Alistair Wanklin reports.
Just hours after the Palestinian Prime Minister told his people they should expect an early withdrawal by Israel, the first steps remained on track, with uniformed Palestinian police in Bethlehem accepting a handover of power there. Already several sites in Gaza have returned to Palestinian control, with many other districts reoccupied by Israel during the past uprising due to be handed back under what sponsors call the Roadmap for Peace. But analysts say uncertainty on both sides remains, with an opinion poll of Israelis showing that two-thirds expect the militia's ceasefire to break within weeks. Alistair Wanklin reporting.
Meanwhile, President Bush says there will be peace in the Middle East when the world firmly and finally rejects terrorist activities. He cites progress in current Mideast peace efforts and thanks the Israelis and Palestinians for taking a risk for peace. In White House comments, Bush expressed cautious optimism about the progress of the U.S.-backed roadmap for Mideast peace. On Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 32 points, the Nasdaq up 20, and S&P up 5 points.
Hey, we're playing all your favorites, but right now I have a pair of free tickets to tonight's big concert for the third caller. Oh, let's go to the phone lines. They are heating up, and let's see. Hello.
Hello.
Is this Ms. Shannon Johnson?
Yes, yes it is.
Oh, you sound very excited.
I am.
Well, Ms. Johnson, I have good news.
I'm the third caller.
No, I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief. Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue. Without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
A new report says children are doing better than most adults think they are. That's according to a new study by a family advocacy organization known as Child Trends. The report says that although the number of children on welfare rolls has been cut in half since 1996, about 40% of adults believe the number has gone up. More people want to buy homes in the U.S. Applications for mortgages rose 5.2% last week. The Mortgage Bankers Association of America notes that rates were moving higher and said the bottom for rates has passed. But the organization predicts that banks will make a record $3.3 trillion worth of mortgage loans this year.
Hey, honey, I rented some videos. Thought maybe we could just stay in tonight, snuggle on the couch.
Great. I'll put one in.
Honey, this is a video about how to repair a washing machine.
I know. Shh. I love this part.
Have a passion for fixing things? Sears has over 4.5 million parts for all major brands of home appliances and lawn equipment. Call 1-800-4-MY-HOME. Click on Sears.com or come into a Sears Parts and Repair Center. Where can you find parts for all major brands, no matter where you bought them? Sears. Good life, great price.
Britain's Prime Minister Tony Blair has again been called to explain the ongoing dispute about intelligence on Iraq's weapons that was included in a government dossier. Asked again for an explanation during his weekly question session in the House of Commons, Blair insisted the matter was closed.
The allegation that this claim was inserted by anyone in number 10 Downing Street or any minister is completely and totally incorrect.
Two inquiries are trying to determine whether the government misled Parliament by inserting information not originally included by intelligence agencies. Blair's chief spin doctor has given evidence to the Foreign Affairs Select Committee, but the allegations are refusing to go away. Now you can own your very own piece of a notorious prison. The National Park Service is selling chunks of concrete from the walls of Alcatraz as a way to help finance restoration of the penitentiary-turned-tourist attraction. Alcatraz closed as a federal prison in 1963. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Clippity-clop, clippity-clop.
Does your car sound like the Clydesdales in Fast Forward? The problem could be unhealthy joints. No, not the horses, your cars. When we come back, I'll tell you all about it. We've all seen the Tornado device on TV and wondered if it really worked. I was also skeptical at first until we tested 6 Tornado units. And in every case, we got more miles per gallon and felt more power. Gasoline's expensive, so when we find something that saves us money, it just makes sense to get it. Call 800-500-8880 and order your Tornado unit today. Or visit TornadoAir.com. That clacking could be a sign of old age in your car's CV or constant velocity joints. These flexible joints allow drive shafts and axles to steer cars smoothly. But if they don't function properly, axles could freeze up or even fall off. How do you recognize faulty CV joints? Hopping and clicking when turning and clunking when accelerating are classic signs. And if you can create these noises by putting your car in reverse and backing in a circle, your CV joints are really aching. So communicate these symptoms to your technician. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to our program today, broadcasting live on the IE America Radio Network, coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system, channel 145 on the Sirius satellite, and broadcasting live on the internet from IEAmericaRadio.com, RadioPower.org, and archived at WhiteRoseSociety.org. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. There are reminders, says Ari Fleischer on 9/26/2001, to all Americans that they need to watch what they say, watch what they do, and that this is not a time for remarks like that. Speaking to somebody who dared question George W. Bush, to those who scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty, said John Ashcroft on December 6, 2001, my message is this. Your tactics only aid terrorists, for they erode our national unity and diminish our resolve. They give ammunition to America's enemies. End quote. Vice President Dick Cheney on May 17, 2002. Democrats need to be very cautious not to seek political advantage by making incendiary suggestions. Dennis Hastert, March 18, 2002. These comments may not undermine the president as he leads us into war, and they may not give comfort to our adversaries, but they come mighty close. Tom DeLay, the former pesticide applicator man, world-famous exterminator Tom DeLay, quote, this is on March 20th, 03, quote, this destructive rhetoric does nothing more than demoralize our troops and second-guess our commander-in-chief. In these days, when we have right-wing pundits writing books suggesting that it is the nature of Democrats to be treasonous, I think it's important to revisit this stuff. I had this idea yesterday. After the show, after we talked about this Ann Coulter stuff, I went online and I found online an English language copy of Mein Kampf by Adolf Hitler, which I only read briefly, lightly, many, many years ago. We had to study some part of it in school, but I really hadn't, I'd never read. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go through here and I'm going to look for the places where Hitler accuses people of treason, and just see if there are parallels between his reasoning and that of Ann Coulter. And I was also going to go through and look for where he accuses in blanket a specific people, in Hitler's case the Jews, and Ann Coulter's case liberals, of being treasonous, anti-national, that sort of thing. And, you know, the plan was to lift out 15 or 20 little juicy quotes. I became completely overwhelmed. The stridency of Mein Kampf was mind-boggling. But what was particularly mind-boggling to me was that, I mean, you read it and the word Jew keeps popping out at you, and it almost blinds you to what he's saying. And if you just go through and replace that word with the word liberal, for example, it reads like some of these modern-day screeds. I mean, it is really and truly amazing. I encourage you, actually, and I never thought I would say this, I encourage you to read this and see how this script is being played out again. This is a real concern. I want to share with you a history of what happened in a country where I once lived, Germany, back after February 27th, 1933. This is 70 years ago. It started when the government, in the midst of a worldwide economic crisis, received reports of an imminent terrorist attack. A foreign ideologue had launched feeble attacks on a few famous buildings, but the media largely ignored his relatively small efforts. The intelligence services knew, however, that the odds were he would eventually succeed. This guy had tried to set on fire 5 different government buildings from the outside. They were all stone or brick buildings, and none of them caught on fire. He had been arrested several times by the police and released. His name was Marinus van der Lubbe. He was a 27-year-old Dutch. He was identified as a communist in some reports, as a psychopath or an insane person in other reports, as mentally retarded in other reports. History will never know. He was executed shortly after this event. History will also never know for sure whether the Nazis knew that von der Lubbe was going to light the Reichstaggebirge, the parliament building, the equivalent of our Congress building, our United States Congress, and helped him, or whether they simply knew he was going to strike somewhere and took advantage. There's a new book out in Germany suggesting that they actually didn't know, because Goebbels ran into the Reichstaggebirge when it was on fire and started frantically trying to rescue ancient tapestries and things that he would have taken out had he known. At least that's the theory of this new book. So there were these warnings that there was this terrorist who was going to attack the nation. But the warnings of investigators were ignored at the highest levels, in part because the government was distracted. On February 27, 1933, the man who claimed to be the nation's leader had not been elected by a majority vote, and the majority of citizens claimed he had no right to the powers he coveted. He was a simpleton, some said, a cartoon character of a man who saw things in black and white terms and didn't have the intellect to understand the subtleties of running a nation in a complex and internationalist world. His coarse use of language, reflecting his political roots in a southernmost state, they speak differently in Bavaria, and actually in Austria, and his simplistic and often inflammatory nationalist rhetoric offended the aristocrats, foreign leaders, and the well-educated elite in the government and media. And as a young man, he joined a secret society with an occult-sounding name. It was called the Thule Society, and bizarre initiation rituals that involve skulls and human bones. Nonetheless, he knew the terrorist was going to strike, and he had already considered his response. When an aide brought him word that the nation's most prestigious building was ablaze, he verified it was the terrorist who had struck, and then rushed to the scene and called a press conference. "You are now witnessing the beginning of a great epoch in history," he proclaimed, standing in front of the burned-out building surrounded by national media. "This fire," he said, his voice trembling with emotion, "is the beginning." He used the occasion, a sign from God, he called it, to declare an all-out war on terrorism and its ideological sponsors, a people, he said, who traced their origins to the Middle East and found motivation for their evil deeds in their religion. 2 weeks later, the first detention center for terrorists was built at Oranienburg to hold the first suspected allies of the infamous terrorist. In a national outburst of patriotism, the leader's flag was everywhere, even printed large in newspapers suitable for window display. Within 4 weeks of the terrorist attack, the nation's now popular leader, had pushed through legislation in the name of combating terrorism and fighting the philosophy he said spawned it, that suspended constitutional guarantees of free speech, privacy, and habeas corpus. Police could now intercept mail and wiretap phones. Suspected terrorists could be imprisoned without specific charges and without access to their lawyers. Police could sneak into people's homes without warrants, if the cases involve terrorism. To get his patriotic, quote, decree on the protection of people and state, end quote, passed over the objections of concerned legislators and civil libertarians, he agreed to put a 4-year sunset provision on it. If the national emergency provoked by the terrorist attack was over by then, the freedoms and rights would be returned to the people and the police agencies would be re-restrained. Legislators later would say that they didn't have the time to read the bill before they voted on it. Immediately after passage of the Anti-Terrorism Act, his federal police agencies stepped up their program of arresting suspicious persons and holding them without access to lawyers or courts. In the first year, only a few hundred were interred, and those who objected were largely ignored by the mainstream press, which was afraid to offend and thus lose access to a leader with such high popularity ratings. And he was incredibly popular then. Citizens who protested the leader in public, and there were many, quickly found themselves confronting the newly empowered police's batons, gas, and jail cells, or fenced off in protest zones safely out of earshot of the leader's public speeches. In the meantime, he was taking almost daily lessons in public speaking, learning to control his tonality, gestures, and facial expressions. He became a very competent orator. Within the first months after that terrorist attack, at the suggestion of a political advisor, he brought a formerly obscure word into common usage. Now, where he got this from was the Zionist movement. He was looking at this movement, and there was this, and he writes about this in Mein Kampf, about how the Jews had this sense of tribe, and he wanted the German people to have a sense of tribe. And he needed a new word to do that, so that people would unite behind him. He wanted to stir a racial pride among his countrymen. So instead of referring to the nation by its name, or even as the fatherland, as he had previously called it, he began to refer to it as the homeland. A phrase first publicly promoted in 1934 at the Nuremberg rallies. Here is Hermann Hess. Is it Hermann Hess? No, Hermann Göring. Anyhow, Hess. I'm having one of those moments there with his first name. He's introducing Hitler to the crowd. And he says, thanks to your leadership, Germany will be attainable as the homeland. Homeland for all Germans in the world. Here is Rudolf Hess.
Deutschland sein Ziel erreichen. Heimat zu sein.
Heimat zu sein. The homeland for Germany.
Heimat zu sein für alle Deutschen der Welt.
Homeland for all Germans.
Sieg Hüll! Sieg Hüll! Sieg
Hüll! Homeland for all Germans in the world. As hoped, people's hearts swelled with pride in the beginning of an us-versus-them mentality was sown. Our land was the homeland, citizens thought. All others were simply foreign lands. We are the true people, he suggested, the only ones worthy of our nation's concern. If bombs fall on others or human rights are violated and it makes our lives better, it's of little concern to us. Playing on this new nationalism and exploiting a disagreement with the French over his increasing militarism, he argued that any international body that didn't act first and foremost in the best interest of his nation was neither relevant nor useful and pulled Germany out of the League of Nations. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America Radio Network. Stick around, we'll be right back.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Prepare to be astonished!
Okay, so just what is going on here, people?
Did you know that you can get the best of progressive talk radio on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145?
Oh, really? Well, that's remarkable.
Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145 is loaded with political talk radio from the other side.
Hurrah!
Kick it off your morning with Doug Steffens' Good Day from 5 a.m. till noon Eastern Time, followed by the Tom Hartman Show from noon to 3 p.m. Then get different perspectives from different show hosts on Radio Free Speed Zone from 3 to 5 p.m.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Family Talk with Dr. Mike Riera then takes the reins from 5 p.m. till 7, followed by All American Talk Radio from 7 p.m. till 9. Then get ready to fire up your night with the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time, all live Monday through Friday on Sirius Satellite Radio Stream 145, powered by the only progressive talk radio network, IE America Radio Network.
So what do you want, a medal?
Well, isn't that special?
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the introductory music to Leni Riefenstahl's famous classic propaganda piece, 1934, The Triumph des Willen, Triumph of the Will. It's available on DVD now. You can pick it up from your local store, from Amazon.com. It's like $15. And you want to know what it looks like to see this kind of stuff rise. It's worth renting. It's worth getting Triumph of the Will. We are recapping the history of February and the months thereafter of 1933. The leader who was unelected by the majority rose to power on the basis, on the back of a terrorist act that he claimed was a sign from God. And within a month, he had passed anti-terrorism legislation with a four-year sunset provision on it to suspend habeas corpus, lock up people without access to their lawyers, make it legal for police to break into people's homes without warrants, listen in on telephone conversations and open mail. And now continuing with the story, and he had just pulled out, October of 1933, he pulled out of the League of Nations, saying that it was no longer relevant nor useful. His propaganda minister orchestrated a campaign to ensure the people that he was a deeply religious man, and that his motivations were rooted in Christianity. There were articles about this in magazines all across Germany in the 30s. He even proclaimed the need for a revival of the Christian faith across his nation, what he called a new Christianity. Every man in his rapidly growing army wore a belt buckle that declared, Gott mit uns, God is with us. And most of them fervently believed it was true. Within a year of the terrorist attack, the nation's leader determined that the various local police and federal agencies around the nation were lacking the clear communication and overall coordinated administration necessary to deal with the terrorist threat facing the nation, particularly from those citizens of Middle Eastern ancestry who were probably terrorists or sympathizers, and the various troublesome intellectuals and liberals. He proposed a single new national agency to protect the security of the homeland, consolidating the actions of a dozen different previously independent police, border, and investigative agencies under one single leader. He appointed one of his most trusted associates to be the leader of this new agency, the Central Security Office for the Homeland, and gave it a role in the government equal to that of other major departments, a cabinet position. His assistant who dealt with the press noted that since the terrorist attack, quote, radio and the press are at our disposal, end quote. Those voices questioning the legitimacy of their nation's leader or raising questions about his checkered past had by now faded from the public's recollection as his Central Security Office began advertising a program encouraging people to phone in tips about suspicious neighbors. This program was so successful that the names of some of those people denounced were soon being broadcast on radio stations. Those denounced usually included opposition politicians and celebrities who dared to speak out, a favorite target of his regime and the media he now controlled either through intimidation or by ownership by corporate allies. To consolidate his power, he concluded the government alone wasn't enough. He reached out to industry and forged an alliance bringing former executives of the nation's largest corporations into his government in high government positions. A flood of government money poured into corporate coffers to fight the war against the Middle Eastern ancestry terrorists lurking within the homeland and to prepare for wars overseas. He encouraged large corporations friendly to him to acquire media outlets and other industrial concerns across the nation, particularly those previously owned by suspicious people of Middle Eastern ancestry. He built powerful alliances with industry. One corporate ally, for example, got the lucrative contract worth millions to build the first large-scale detention center for enemies of the state. Soon more would follow. Industry flourished in 1934 in Germany. Interesting how Halliburton got the contract to build Camp X-Ray at Guantanamo Bay, but I guess that's a little off topic. We'll stay with Germany and their history when we come back from this break. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stick around. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Thank you. For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Laura Miller.
A victory for free speech and workers' rights online from the California Supreme Court. The case involved Ken Hamidi, a former engineer for the Intel Corporation. After being fired in 1995 over a workers' compensation dispute, Hamidi began emailing all Intel employees with exposés on the company's unfair labor practices. Intel went to court and got an injunction barring Hamidi from sending emails to Intel, claiming that by doing so he was trespassing on private property. But a 4-3 majority of California's highest court has ruled Hamidi was engaging in nothing more than free speech, much like a protester would standing on the sidewalk in front of Intel's headquarters holding a sign. And because of his status as a former Intel employee, the court believed Hamidi's emails didn't fit the definition of spam either, as he was actually passing along information of interest to other Intel workers.
The U.S. Customs Service is under fire for allowing cocoa harvested by slaves into the country. U.S. law prohibits the importation of goods manufactured by prison or slave labor, and labor advocates say that should include cocoa from the Ivory Coast, much of which is produced by indentured children for major chocolate processors like Nestle, Cargill, and Archer Daniels Midland. Terry Collinsworth is with the International Labor Rights Fund. His group recently filed suit against the Customs Service after petitioning the agency for a year to prevent the importation of slave-harvested cocoa into the U.S.
Our initial effort here will be to ask a court to order an administrative agency to implement a law as required by Congress.
The Ivory Coast produces nearly half of the world's cocoa supply, and the International Labor Rights Fund estimates that nearly all chocolate sold in the U.S. contains some cocoa that was picked by indentured children.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You've got your green alligators and long-neck geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. In the spirit of the new... Oh, boy. What's the word? In the spirit of... Excuse me? Of the new... Well, this Ann Coulter thing about anybody who disagrees is treasonous. It's wrong. It's treason. It's terror. Let's visit the last time this happened in the world, the last time that a government rose up in big way, a large, powerful government rose up and said to its own people, you disagree with the leader, you're not patriotic. You don't go along with us, that's treason. The last inquisition, that was the word I was looking for. Let's revisit this. So we've got this leader, he was not elected. Yes, I know, Donald Rumsfeld the other day, when saying that there maybe shouldn't be elections in Iraq, said, well, Adolf Hitler was elected. No, I'm sorry, he was appointed by Hindenburg. His party had a minority of houses, seats in the parliament prior to the terrorist attack of February 27th, 1933, when Marinus van der Lubbe
burned the Reichstaggebäude, the parliament building, their equivalent of our United States Congress building. And Hitler showed up at that burning building and said, "This is a sign from God," and declared a war on terrorism, and within 1 month had passed a law for the protection of the German people, protection of the homeland, suspending habeas, a law with a 4-year sunset provision on it, suspending habeas corpus, allowing police to do sneak and peeks, allowing them to read people's mail, allowing them to listen to phone conversations, the whole thing. And then after that, he introduced the word homeland. So this, you know, we need to create this racial pride. He started wearing his Christianity on his sleeve. German newspapers and magazines doing long feature articles about what a devoted Christian he was. He called for a new Christianity, embedded it into his political party, began officially opening all political events with prayer. With his number two man, now a year later, things are going well, but not all that well. And his number two man, a master of manipulating the media, he began a campaign to convince the people of the nation that a small, limited war was necessary. Another nation was harboring many of the suspicious Middle Eastern people. By the way, he wrote about this extensively in Mein Kampf, of the Jews in Austria. And even though its connection with the terrorist who had set afire the nation's most important building was tenuous at best, that nation held resources their nation badly needed if they were to have room to live, what he called Lebensraum, and maintain their prosperity. He called a press conference and publicly delivered an ultimatum to the leader of the other nation, provoking an international uproar. He claimed the right to strike preemptively in self-defense, and nations across Europe and the world at first denounced him for it. Pointed out that it was a doctrine only claimed in the past by nations seeking worldwide empire like Caesar's Rome or Alexander's Greece. It took a few months, an intense international debate and lobbying with European nations, but after he personally met with the leader of the United Kingdom, finally a deal was struck. After the military action began, Prime Minister Neville Chamberlain, this was actually after his invasion of Czechoslovakia, told the nervous British people that giving in to this leader's new first strike doctrine would bring, quote, peace for our time, end quote. Thus Hitler annexed Austria in a lightning move, riding a wave of popular support, as leaders so often do in times of war. The Austrian government was unseated and replaced by a new leadership friendly to Germany, and German corporations began to take over Austrian resources. In a speech responding to critics of the invasion, and yes, there were many, Hitler said, quote, "Certain foreign newspapers have said that we fell on Austria with brutal methods. I can only say even in death they cannot stop lying. I have in the course of my political struggle won much love from my people, but when I crossed the former frontier into Austria, there met me such a stream of love as I have never experienced. Not as tyrants have we come, but as liberators." End quote. To deal with those who dissented from his policies at the advice of his politically savvy advisors, he and his handmaidens in the press began a campaign to equate him and his policies with patriotism and the nation itself. National unity was essential, they said, to ensure that the terrorists or their sponsors didn't think they'd succeeded in splitting the nation or weakening its will. In times of war, they said, there could be only one people, one nation, and one commander-in-chief. Ein Volk. Ein Reich, ein Führer. And so, his advocates in the media began a nationwide campaign charging the critics of his policies were attacking the nation itself, were engaging in treason. Those questioning him were labeled anti-German or not good Germans. And it was suggested that they were aiding the enemies of the state by failing in the patriotic necessity of supporting the nation's valiant men in uniform. This was one of his single most effective ways to stifle dissent and pit wage-earning people from whom most of the army came against the intellectuals and liberals, quote-unquote, who were critical of his policies. Nonetheless, once the small war annexation of Austria was successfully and quickly completed and peace returned, voices of opposition were again raised in the homeland. The almost daily release of news bulletins about the dangers of terrorist communist cells wasn't enough to rouse the populace and totally suppress dissent. And they were the regular, these warnings about the terrorists are going to come back. A full-out war was necessary, he believed, to divert public attention from the growing rumbles within the country about disappearing dissidents, violence against liberals, Jews, and union leaders, and the epidemic of crony capitalism that was producing empires of wealth in the corporate sector but threatening the middle class's way of life. A year later, to the week, Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia. The nation was now fully at war, and all internal dissent was suppressed in the name of national security. It was the end of Germany's first experiment with democracy. As we conclude this review of history, there are a few milestones worth remembering. February 27, 2003, which is just a few months ago, was the 70th anniversary of Dutch terrorist Marinus van der Lubbe's successful firebombing of the German Parliament building, the Reichstag building, the terrorist act that catapulted Hitler to legitimacy and reshaped the German constitution. By the time of his successful and brief action to seize Austria, in which almost no German blood was shed, Hitler was the most beloved and popular leader in the thousand-year history of his nation. Hailed around the world, he was later Time magazine's Man of the Year. Most Americans remember his Office for the Security of the Homeland, known as the Reichssicherheitsstaffel, simply by its most famous agency's initials, the SS. We also remember that the Germans developed a new form of violent and highly effective warfare they termed lightning war or Blitzkrieg, which, while generating devastating civilian losses, also produced a highly desirable, quote, shock and awe, end quote, among the nation's leadership. Reflecting on that time, the American Heritage Dictionary, published in 1983 by Houghton Mifflin Company, left us this definition of the form of government the German democracy had become through Hitler's close alliance with the largest German corporations and his policy of using war as a tool to keep power. Fascism, the American Heritage Dictionary says, is, quote, a system of government that exercises a dictatorship of the extreme right, typically through the merging of state and business leadership, together with belligerent nationalism, end quote. Today, as we face financial and political crises, it's useful to remember that the ravages of the Great Depression hit Germany and the United States alike. Through the 1930s, however, Hitler and Roosevelt chose very different courses to bring their nations back to power and prosperity. Germany's response was to use government to empower corporations and reward the society's richest individuals, to privatize much of the commons, to stifle dissent, to strip people of their constitutional rights, and to create an illusion of prosperity through continual and ever-expanding war. America, on the other hand, in the 1930s, passed minimum wage laws to raise the middle class, enforced antitrust laws to diminish the power of corporations, increased taxes on corporations and the wealthiest individuals, created Social Security, and became the employer of last resort through programs to build national infrastructure, promote the arts, and replant forests. To the extent that our Constitution is still intact, I would suggest to you, the choice is once again ours. This destructive rhetoric, Tom DeLay says, does nothing more than demoralize our troops and second-guess our commander-in-chief. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Our quote of the day, there is no more fundamental axiom of American freedom than the familiar statement, in a free country, we punish men for crimes they commit, but never for the opinions they have. And Ari Fleischer, there are reminders to all Americans that they need to watch what they say, watch what they do, and that this is not a time for remarks like that. Or, as Attorney General John Ashcroft said, to those who scare peace-loving people with phantoms of lost liberty, my message is this: your tactics only aid terrorists, for they erode our national unity and diminish our resolve. Ein Volk, ein Reich. But will the Führer last? We saw yesterday on Crossfire Ralph Nader talking about making a comeback. He has not announced that he's going to seek the Green nomination. And in fact, a lot of Greens are saying, hey, this guy never even joined the Green Party. In fact, yesterday he renounced the Green Party again, said he will not join it. I have a feeling a lot of Greens must be feeling rather used by this guy. But he's talking about coming back. What will the consequences of this be? I think this is possible, that Ralph can make a comeback? Is it a good thing? Is it going to be destructive? Is it going to guarantee George Bush his first term as an elected president? What's going to happen with Ralph Nader? Interesting question. There's also this, in the news here, this high-income workers protest limits to overtime pay. We talked last week about the idea that the con agenda can be summarized basically in one phrase: cheap labor. Everything boils down to cheap labor. More babies, cheap labor. Prison labor, cheap labor. Break the unions, cheap labor. Virtually all of their policies. So now comes along this change in the labor policy practices. And if anybody knows more about this than I do, and I don't know a lot about, I would love to hear, you know, drop me a note, go to our website. If you go to TomHartman.com or TomHartmanShow.com, it gets you to the radio show homepage. First of all, you can click on the chat room button and hang out in our chat room. And if you've got things that you want to say to me but you don't want to call 1-800-TALK-YES, you can pop them in there. Do it in a colored typeface in large so I'll know that it's something you want me to read on the air. Or you could post it on our message board, where we have regular discussions going on a regular basis. It has about 20,000 messages in there now. Or you can email it to me, tom@tomhartman.com. And I'd like to know more about this. The changes, okay, we got Fox News says these new labor policy changes will cut down on overtime for about 600,000 high-income workers. I'm curious what Fox News thinks is a high-income worker. Apparently, it's anybody who makes more than $65,000 a year. Probably that is high-income over at Fox News. And actually, you know, truth be told, that's about twice the average wage in the United States. So, but then on the other side, we've got the LRA, the Labor Research Association, online. They say, bit by bit, Republicans in Washington are squeezing working families, most recently, by targeting the 40-hour work week and the basic right to overtime pay. Neither a war abroad nor an embarrassing intra-party political skirmish over the size of President Bush's next tax boondoggle for the rich has distracted Republicans from their campaign against average working citizens. And they go through this whole thing about how under this new program, instead of cash overtime pay, people can bank up to 160 hours of comp time. And so it's called the Family Time Flexibility Act. And they say this is really a Trojan horse that hides a more sinister systemic swipe at the 40-hour work week by weakening laws that prevent overtime exploitation. Representative George Miller, senior Democrat of the committee that is looking at this, says employees are in effect being asked to give a no-interest loan to their employer. He added that under the current law, employers can already grant time off in exchange for overtime work. And there's a good rant here. Just as President Bush's call for tax simplification cleverly masked trillion-dollar giveaways to the wealthy, the administration's stab at simplifying wage rules is sure to be a boon to employers. Now, you know, and then the AFL-CIO, the same thing. Their website: the Bush rules could mean that many workers would face unpredictable work schedules because of an increased demand for extra hours for which employers would not have to pay time and a half. Most of these workers already are covered by overtime protections because of the nature of their jobs. These are the lower-income workers that they say they're going to be protecting now. In contrast, the Bush administration's proposed changes in workers' job definitions and duties that must be met to allow an employer to classify workers as exempt and thus ineligible for overtime would affect many more hundreds of thousands of workers. And they go on, you know, long thing about this. Now, on the other hand, the New York Times today had an article that essentially said this is a good thing because it's going to raise from, it's going to raise up to 22,000. AFL apparently wanted 27,000. The bottom line of what can be called management. So who knows? Stick around. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. It's about 10 minutes before the hour.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The Business Trip by Super 8 Motels.
Somewhere between the last meeting and home, between four drive-thrus and the blob of ketchup on your favorite tie, between 60 dead bugs on your windshield and a wiper blade gone awry, somewhere between where you are and where you're going, there's a Super 8. See you along the way.
All Super 8 motels are individually owned and operated.
They finally did it. A weight loss formula that's guaranteed to work. And it comes from Metabolife, the leader in weight loss for years. It's new Metabolife Ultra, with an appetite suppressant and formulated for sustained energy. Its key ingredients have been clinically tested and shown to help you lose weight. In fact, we're so sure that Metabolife Ultra will work for you that we absolutely guarantee your results. Go to Metabolife.com for all the details. It's available now at Walmart. Ask for it by name, Metabolife Ultra.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune into Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Tanya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
The Mike Molloy Show.
Well, let's move on to somebody who is evil but very bright. That would be Ari Fleischer at the briefing today.
The job of anybody who is the White House press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking and why he's thinking it. And that's what I do for a living.
Yeah, right. The job of the press secretary is to faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
When do I get to my Game Boy? Hey, it's time for lunch. I want to take a nap. How do you spell Putin? Let me see. Who's the president of Afghanistan?
You know he tried to kill my dad?
Oh, my God. There's Laura with my milk. Faithfully articulate what the president is thinking?
All righty, then.
The
Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting from Athenwood Studio in the People's Republic of Vermont. I guess you heard our studio attack cat there in the last segment. Mr. Higgins, he actually is an attack cat. Tom, I love your show. Sorry I never called. This is an email from Ollie. Sorry I never called. Perhaps I have a fear of the people from bringing my point of view. I am a Muslim and I support you 100%. Just wanted to encourage you that there are many Muslims that I know that are supporting you. May God fulfill your dreams and keep you protected. Below are facts from Islamic Council. And there's a whole collection of interesting stuff here that's attached to this. Quotes from the Quran and Ibn Majah and other sources about how Islam is fundamentally a religion of peace and tolerance. And I one of my favorite mystics is Rumi, who is Muslim, of course. And you absolutely get that sense reading Rumi. I am convinced that in every religion, I mean, look at the horrors that have been perpetrated in the name of Christianity. Joshua, the book of Joshua in the Bible of the ancient Judaism. Look at what's happened with Islam. As far as I know, the only religion in the world in whose name a war has not been started is Buddhism, which is just so deeply grounded in pacifism. So I think it's important for us not to ever make the mistake that the Germans made 50 years or 70 years ago of portraying a people or a religion or both as being monolithic. And that today, again, we not make that mistake with regard to people's political opinions or viewpoints. That to say, for me on this side, to say that all conservatives are nasty, or for somebody on the other side to say all liberals are treasonous, this is the worst kind of demagoguery. It's destructive to democracy. Here with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay with us. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour. See you shortly.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
About the Mike Malloy program. You know, the reason I turned this man off.
Why?
Is because he sounds like an 8-year-old.
Me?
Name calling.
I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not an 8-year-old. I'm not.
You should get somebody who at least has some intelligence.
No, don't fire me. No. I got kids in college.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. The International Olympic Committee has chosen the city in which the 2010 Winter Olympics will be held. Olympic President Jacques Rogge announced the winner from Prague.
The International Olympic Committee has the honor of announcing that the 21st Olympic Winter Games in 2010 are awarded to the city of Vancouver.
There hasn't been an Olympics in Canada since Calgary hosted the 1988 Winter Games. A crowd in Vancouver watching the announcement via satellite burst into loud cheers at the news. Salzburg, Austria, and Pyeongchang, South Korea were Vancouver's competition, and all three made final presentations before the IOC voted in Prague. Three workers at a Jefferson City, Missouri plant were shot to death last night by a fellow employee who later died after he apparently turned the gun on himself. Five others were wounded in the rampage that took place at the Modine manufacturing plant. According to a company spokesman, the shooter is said to have been in his 20s and had worked for the company for 2 years. No motive has been determined yet for the killings. A Virginia judge has granted a change of venue for the upcoming trial of Washington, D.C. area sniper suspect Lee Boyd Malvo. Allison Brown reports.
A big win for Malvo's attorneys, who argue that their client would not get a fair trial in Fairfax County, Virginia, the site of one of last fall's deadly sniper shootings. They say pretrial publicity in the case made it impossible to seat an impartial jury in Fairfax. Judge Jane Roush seems to have sided with that argument. The November trial now moved to the southeastern portion of the state, to Chesapeake, Virginia. I'm Allison Brown.
On Wall Street this hour, the Dow is up 53 points, NASDAQ up 23, and the S&P up 4 points.
I had a bad headache. I tried Advil Liquigels. They work faster than Tylenol.
I needed stronger medicine, and Advil Liquigels get that medicine to my headache faster.
I get better relief with Advil Liquigels.
Every day, more people are choosing Advil Liquigels to relieve tough headache pain. Advil has these advanced capsules with liquid medicine inside to rush relief where you need it. Proven faster, stronger, better than Tylenol.
Now, every time I get a tough headache, I choose Advil Liquigels.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
Israel has made good on fulfilling one of the conditions of the U.S.-backed roadmap to peace plan in the Middle East. The handover of the West Bank town of Bethlehem by Israel to Palestinian police has been completed. Church bells rang to mark the occasion in Manger Square, believed by Christians to be the birthplace of Christ. There's still no trace of missing Baylor University basketball player Patrick Dennehy. Police in Waco, Texas, have searched a wooded area where Dennehy and his roommate were allegedly to have been firing guns. Dennehy has been missing since June 12th. No arrests have been made in connection with his disappearance.
They finally did it. A weight loss formula that's guaranteed to work. And it comes from Metabolife, the leader in weight loss for years. It's new Metabolife Ultra, with an appetite suppressant and formulated for sustained energy. Its key ingredients have been clinically tested and shown to help you lose weight. In fact, we're so sure that Metabolife Ultra will work for you that we absolutely guarantee your results. Go to Metabolife.com for all the details. It's available now at Walmart. Ask for it by name. Metabolife Ultra.
A hearing will be held today for a man suspected of being part of what the government alleges is a Virginia Jihad network that trained to work with terrorists to fight for Muslim causes abroad. Today's proceedings have to do with a request to hold Masood Ahmed Khan until he goes to trial. Minnesota-based food maker Hormel is fighting back because the word spam has come to mean annoying, unwanted email. Hormel makes Spam, the canned meat product. Their target is a Seattle company called Spam Arrest, the makers of software designed to block spam, the email variety. The Washington Post reports Hormel says the name Spam Arrest is an infringement of their trademark and might confuse customers. Since 1937, Hormel has sold 6 billion cans of Spam. And three highly anticipated new films arrive in theaters today. They are the sci-fi sequel Terminator 3, Rise of the Machines, Legally Blonde 2, Red, White, and Blonde, and DreamWorks animated film Sinbad, Legend of the Seven Seas. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Petri dishes, grandma's parlor, and well-used tennis shoes. All breeding grounds for yucky mold. Don't wrinkle your nose, because you've got one, too, in your car. When we come back, I'll tell you where.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
Your car's heater and air conditioner provide the perfect breeding ground for smelly mold and mildew. Here's a tip to eliminate these odors. Disconnect the AC compressor before starting your car in the morning. Set the emergency brake and crank your engine. Run your AC on max and in the recirculation mode. Then spray a small can of Lysol in the passenger's foot area behind the glove compartment. Let dry 1 hour and reconnect the compressor. Voila! A car that will smell fresher all season. Now for those tennis shoes. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, speaking to you on the IE America Radio Network. Coast to coast and border to border on terrestrial radio stations in the United States and beaming down from 100 miles in the sky, the depths of outer space on the Sirius radio satellite, Sirius Channel 145, reaching from the equator to the North Pole virtually, all of North America and Central America, and also beaming live on the Internet from radiopower.org and ieamericaradio.com. And archived at whiterosesociety.org, Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Are we winning the war on tobacco? This is one of the we're going to talk to two folks about this hour, and if you have thoughts or comments on this, 1-800-TALK-YES, 825-5937, love to hear them. I should start out by saying I was an addict. I started smoking cigarettes when I was probably 13, 14, something like that. And quit when Louise became pregnant with our first child, which was 30 years ago, almost. And Louise quit also. We were both junkies, as it were. And I grew up in a house full of smokers, and everybody I knew was a smoker. So this is now. So should we ban smoking? Should we allow it? Should we encourage something else? There's these civil liberties issues. What about what's going on in New York State? Should they ban smoking in bars? What about the rights of people who are working in the bars? I mean, my with regard to that, just have to say my position is that just like your right to swing your fist ends at the beginning of my nose, somebody's right to fill the air with something that's going to be harmful to me ends when I'm in that air as well. And that's not something that the Tobacco Institute likes. Anyhow, there's a lot of changes happening, and some of them have to do with economics, and some of them have to do with politics, and some of them have to do with people just waking up and chronicling many of these changes. The World Watch Institute has been keeping track of this stuff, publishing about it, publishing World Watch magazine. World Watch Institute is one of my absolute favorites. They're an extraordinary organization. And Brian Hallweil is a research associate of the World Watch Institute. He came to the Institute in 1997 as the John Gardner Public Service Fellow from Stanford University. At the Institute, he focuses on the social and ecological consequences of the way we produce food, and in this case, tobacco, examining and the food that's replacing it, examining topics ranging from organic farming to biotechnology, from water, from hunger to water scarcity. Brian, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here. Thanks.
Well, thank you for being on. Tell me about what's going on here. You wrote this piece in World Watch Magazine, This Old Barn, This New Money, by Brian Hallwile, and it talks about the change that's happening among tobacco farmers in Appalachia.
That's right. A few months ago, actually, it was last fall, I took a trip down to Appalachia, actually the point where Virginia touches North Carolina and also not too far from Tennessee, because I had heard that several dozen farmers, tobacco farmers, people who'd had tobacco in their family for generations since the American Revolution, were getting out of tobacco and converting to organic vegetable production. And they were doing it, as you indicated, largely for economic reasons, because they weren't making a living growing tobacco anymore, and because of this surging market and the surging demand for organic vegetables.
Why weren't they making a living growing tobacco anymore?
Well, it's an interesting story, because tobacco in America and a lot of other countries has traditionally been a crop that's been a savior for small farmers. Governments have tightly controlled the supply of tobacco and the price of tobacco. And so a farmer, even with a few acres, 3 acres, 5 acres, 10 acres, could make a living growing tobacco. A corn or soybean farmer in this country could never make a living with that small an acreage. The price for a bushel of corn is just way too low. You've got to have much more volume to make an adequate living. But in recent years, this quota system that supported tobacco farmers has fallen apart as the big American tobacco companies have looked to tobacco growers in Brazil or Africa or elsewhere in the world for cheaper tobacco. And so there's no longer a demand. So even though there's this quota system, no one's buying American tobacco. And so while at the same time you have all these lawsuits against the smoking companies, and you have the cigarette companies, and you have states from Maryland to Tennessee to the Carolinas trying to encourage farmers to get out of tobacco, there wasn't really a viable alternative for these people who were traditionally farmers tied to the land.
And the alternative now, it seems, is organic produce, because there's such a demand for it. The price is high. It's a very profitable crop. It's something that small farmers can actually do better than large farmers, because it's a little more labor intensive. And so that's the transition that's happening. Is that it in a nutshell?
Exactly. That's precisely it. And the interesting thing is that although these farmers have been wed to tobacco and their lives have revolved around the different cycles of planting and trimming and thinning and harvesting and then curing tobacco, because they're small-scale growers, as you said, they are used to being intimate with the crop. They're used to handling their crop. They're used to checking for various pests. And so some of the people who are helping these tobacco growers shift to organic farming are finding that it actually works very well on their scale, and it actually the growers are quite adaptable to that approach to farming.
Right. We're talking with Brian Hallwile of the World Watch Institute, which is it's worldwatch.org, isn't it, the website?
Exactly.
Yeah, www.worldwatch.org. And Brian is the author of a piece called This Old Barn, This New Money, about the transition from tobacco to organic farming that's happening in Appalachia, or in the tobacco-producing states, actually, right across over there. One last question here, Brian. If the economics of this are working out for tobacco farmers, because organic produce, you know, works in small crops and this sort of thing, because there's demand, because organic food is kind of a boutique crop in many parts of the United States, particularly more densely populated parts of the United States. I mean, here in Vermont, the local food co-op is larger than our supermarket, because everybody I know, you know, shops there. I mean, they actually beat Shaw's in the chain supermarket in terms of the number of people in the parking lot, and they're bigger. But I think that Vermont's the exception in that. I think that most of the country, the organic organic foods are actually relatively cheap here, and we have a lot of farmers markets and things. But I think that out there, what you're seeing is that it's kind of a boutique food, and therefore there's a premium price attached to it. What happens if enough people in the territories surrounding these formerly tobacco growing areas start buying organic produce, that the regular farmers, the people who are, you know, big time in agriculture, say, hey, we can make more money at doing this than we can growing, you know, Starlink corn or something, and they get into it and suddenly the prices start falling. Are we setting these folks up for disaster?
Well, it's an interesting challenge. The head of the North Carolina Burley Tobacco Association, a guy who grows 200 acres of tobacco, recently heard about this program and made the conversion to growing largely tomatoes. On that scale, he's producing more organic tomatoes than all the other tobacco growers that have converted to organic tomato production. So they're already facing that issue. And the challenge, of course, is expanding the market. With tobacco, you had a captive supply. There was no marketing involved. The U.S. government and the American cigarette companies would buy as much as the American tobacco grower produced. Now they're in a very different market, and getting their crop out there, promoting it, and raising awareness not only in their own areas but all over the country about buying organic produce is the only way that there's going to continue to be a market for these growers.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. Brian, thank you very much for being on our program. Brian Hallweil, www.worldwatch.org. And Brian, just one last note here. Anything hot or interesting that's on the World Watch website that people should look for? Any new topics?
Well, we recently released one of our annual publications, Vital Signs 2003, which is sort of a yearbook, an eclectic yearbook of various environmental and social trends. It's a great, quick, easy reference to what's happening on the globe on an environmental perspective, and I think people should check it out.
Great. I've subscribed to that for years. I used good chunks of it when I was writing Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight back in 1997, and it was marvelous. Brian Hallweil, World Watch Institute, thank you very much for being with us, Brian. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you'd like to be on the program. 1-800-825-5937. And Chris in Abiquiu, New Mexico is on the line. Chris, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Well, thank you. Good show today, Tom.
Thank you, and thank you for your patience in waiting for me to pick up the call.
Well, most of my patience is very patient. you know, one of the scariest parts of the comparisons between Nazi Germany and the George W. Bush administration is the fact that I've come to the realization George W. Bush would not be intellectually capable of writing Mein Kampf, but Karl Rove would. The Jesus out of me. And as an aside...
Well, let me back... Chris, have you actually read Mein Kampf?
Oh, yeah. Definitely read Mein Kampf back in high school.
Yeah, because it's... You know, I would say it's not a particularly sophisticated work. It is, however... It's more of the kind of Pat Buchanan style of populism than sophisticated political insight. But I agree with you. I don't think that George W. Bush could probably write a college term paper that good. But in any case.
And to be sure, being called a traitor by someone like Ann Coulter is almost a compliment when you realize, if you've listened to her or read any of her other rambling muses, she makes John Birch look like Tommy Toon. She really does.
Well, John, you mean the John Birch Society. John Birch himself
was
just some poor guy whose name they hijacked. Yeah.
Poor fellow, in any case. Yeah. But, you know, the comparisons are there. All I can do is, deep within my heart, believe that there are enough differences in the times that we can overcome the rise of fascism, which we are indeed facing.
Yeah. Chris, I'm really glad you brought that up. There's two points that I wanted to make with regard to this, and that's the second one. The first was I've had two people now in the chat room ask me where to find that thing that I essentially read in the last hour. And if you just go to tomhartman.com and click on the link that says to my articles on democracy, it's called When Democracy Failed. It's right there on the web. But the second was I've had a number of people ever since I first published that Uncommon Dreams about 6 or 8 months ago say to me, oh, you know, we're doomed, all is lost, you know, we're going down the same road that the Nazis did. It's important to remember that in Germany in the 1930s, they had no democratic tradition. They had had democracy for less than 30 years. It had been forced on them by the loss in World War I. And there were people alive who still wanted the king, who were nostalgic for the Kaiser. And Hitler gave them a king. In the United States, on the other hand, we have, as you pointed out, Chris, 227 years of democratic tradition, or at least something close to it. And I don't think that we're going to stand for this. Time will tell. Chris, thanks for the call. I appreciate your comments. Stay with us. We'll be right back. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number. We'll be right back.
I am driven to overcome.
I am driven to succeed.
If you're driven, then you need a health insurance company that's driven too and knows how to take care of the self-employed, the backbone of our country. Call 877-740-7797 and have the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company provide you with affordable health insurance.
I am driven to be my own boss, to live my own life.
I am driven to work when I want to, with whom I want to.
I am driven to be the best.
And I expect the companies that support me to be driven too.
For affordable health insurance designed for the self-employed, call right now. 877-740-7797. Toll free, 877-740-7797. Mega. We are driven. Home office, Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Not available in all states. Benefits may vary by state.
Now, everything you need for successful estate planning comes in one package. The new Master Estate Kit is a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you'll get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims, court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free Family Legal Guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
Sherwood Baylert is a member of Congress and, despite that, not a bad guy. He's a New York Republican who's been in the House for more than 20 years, and he loves the place. Fine. It's said that some people who muck manure for a living come to love the smell, so everyone to their own taste. But I thought Sherwood had been sniffing the congressional perfumes a bit too deeply when he recently declared that the House is, quote, the one institution in the whole wide world that's the personification of this great democracy of ours. Democracy? The great majority of Americans are factory workers, clerks, cab drivers, dirt farmers, teachers, Main Street merchants, programmers, waitresses, healthcare workers, and the like. How many of them serve in Congress, or are even marginally represented by those who serve there? About 70% of Americans make less than $50,000 a year. How many of our Congress critters go to Washington from such an income perspective? Indeed, the U.S. Public Interest Research Group reports that nearly half of the newly elected members of Congress are millionaires, which 99.5% of Americans are not. And if the House is so representative of our people, why didn't we get a pay raise 4 of the last 5 years as they gave themselves? Why don't we have top-flight health coverage paid for by taxpayers as they do? Why don't we get golden no-worry pensions as they do? Phil Graham is one example of congressional apartness from the rest of America. The Texas senator, who just retired, opposed any government program to help regular folks while he slavishly served the corporate powers that financed his elections. He became a millionaire while in office. And now that he's out, we the people will send him a retirement check of $78,534 every year. He'll get more doing nothing than 80% of us will make working day in and day out. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's the personification of plutocracy, not of democracy.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the iAmerica Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Channel 145, broadcasting live around the world on the Internet, as well as on terrestrial radio stations. In our chat room, go to TomHartmanShow.com and click on the chat button. It'll take you to the International Trade Forum. On CompuServe, you click the chat button, and it drops you into the chat room. And Pace Cop says, Tom, would we already be in a Great Depression if it weren't for the liberal reforms of the early 1900s? And I'd say, yeah. In fact, it goes beyond that. The liberal reforms of the 1900s, particularly the work of the Roosevelt administration, the Social Security, Medicare didn't come along until, as I recall, 1965, but Social Security, minimum wage laws, the government getting in the process of actually defending unionization rights. It's interesting. During Abraham Lincoln's time, the word strikes were so novel that the word strike was in quotes in newspaper headlines. It was such a new thing. And the reason why was because from the founding of the country up until the Civil War, there had always been such a surplus of labor because there were so many people who were coming over here from Europe and from other countries that who were willing to work for nothing or for slave wages. And in fact, many of them, three out of five people in New England in the early 1700s, three out of five European ancestry people in England in the 1700s, in the early 1700s, I forget the year, 1730, 1750, were indentured servants. That is, they had paid a debenture. They had gone into debt to come over here from Europe, and they were working off that debt. It was typically a 7-year debt. Sometimes it was a 10-year debt, sometimes a 12-year debt, for depending on whether it came with their families or their wives and things like that. But there was pretty much a standard for this, and so labor was cheap, and there were no strikes. Well, in the time leading up to the Civil War, strikes started happening. And Abraham Lincoln actually was one of the first United States presidents to speak out on behalf of labor's right to strike. It was quite interesting. So anyhow, but then, of course, during the Gilded Age, the rise of the Republicans from the 1870s and through the, you know, early 1900s, the right to strike got more and more dead. There were all these labor wars. Then the progressives came out, you know, in the 1890s, 1900, 1910. Teddy Roosevelt got on the bandwagon. And then Roosevelt came along. And I would say that not only has this stuff prevented us from being in the midst of a Great Depression right now, although I think we are skating right along the very narrow edge of it, because in the Great Depression, all three bubbles burst. We talked about the bubbles yesterday, the currency bubble, the housing bubble, and the stock bubble. So far, we've only popped the stock bubble. The currency bubble and the housing bubble are waiting. But not only have these in some ways prevented it from being as bad as it might be, but they led to this 50-year golden era of the American middle class, which was something that, literally, think about it, the world had never seen before. I mean, this was new in the experience of what we call civilization. This idea of a strong, vital middle class where a single person working in a family could earn enough money with a 40-hour work week to put their kids through college, to pay for their medical expenses, and to retire on. And that's really what it was like. I mean, I grew up in Lansing, Michigan. A lot of my friends, their parents worked at Oldsmobile. They worked on the assembly lines. And their parents were able to put them through college. I mean, just, it was all right there. Good pensions. This created an extraordinary time in America. And this, of course, is being wiped out, eroded now by the Republicans and the conservatives who want to take us back to a cheap labor state, a cheap labor position. And this is, I think, the danger that democracy faces. Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
The current drought in the American West could last for years. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The western United States is facing another year of serious drought. The current dry spell began in 1999, and last year was the driest one in more than a century. As the drought continues, the Southwest, the Rockies, and the Great Plains must deal with dwindling water supplies and a growing threat of wildfires. Julio Betancourt is a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey and a professor at the University of Arizona. Betancourt and a team of researchers studied patterns in tree rings to determine the patterns of previous dry spells. He says prolonged, widespread drought has hit the region many times over the centuries.
So the question is, you know, this drought that began roughly in the late 1990s continues to the present. How long is that drought going to last?
Betancourt says dry periods in the West are linked to what's happening in the oceans. When the surface temperature of the tropical Pacific turns cold, the West goes dry. The most extensive and persistent droughts occur when the tropical Pacific is cold and the North Atlantic is warm at the same time. That happened in the 1950s, and it's happening again now. Betancourt says water managers should be cautious.
If I was a betting man right now, for example, and I had a choice between it's going to get wet in the near future, it's going to be average, and it's going to be dry, I bet on the dry scenario given the configuration of ocean climate right now.
Betancourt says it's always a good idea to conserve water, but with the likelihood of more dry years in the future, water conservation in the West is now more important than ever. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. While major media ad spending stood at $54 per person in China and $282 per person in Japan, in the United States it was $494 per person, 10 times the global average, says Eric Asadorian of the World Watch Institute. Eric is a research associate there, was an environmental organizer with the U.S. Public Interest Research Group prior to joining World Watch and campaigned on toxics and environmental health issues. And Eric is an expert on the advertising and production worldwide of, well, advertising industry in general, apparently, from what I'm reading here. Eric, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. Eric?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Hey, welcome. Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Great. Well, thank you for having me.
Tell us about, you're welcome, tell us, and thanks for coming on the show. Five of the 10 top advertisers were car companies, your article says. The pharmaceutical industry, the sixth largest global advertiser, spent $2.5 billion. And American children are bombarded with 40,000 television ads. Where does the tobacco industry fit into this?
Well, the tobacco industry, actually, according to the most recent FTC, Federal Trade Commission numbers, they actually spend $11 billion per year in the United States. So they are a significant advertiser. You know, a lot of that is coming in the form of direct media advertising in magazines. And then there's the more subtle ways that the cigarettes are being advertised, especially to children, and that's through cinema. Not intentionally so, but there was a recent study in The Lancet that showed that the tobacco industries, or cigarettes in general, being in cinema actually lead to increases in teen smoking. So the fact that
let me tell you, Eric, let me just share a story with you. I have been looking for, it's almost been a decade now, for somebody to share this with, because I think that this is, I would love to see you take this and run with it.
Right.
10 years ago, I've been writing books and articles forever, and I have 13 books in print right now, and there's a couple of novels that I wrote back in the 80s. One was called The Sword of Gyuri. It was a thriller that took place in Japan. And I sold the movie rights to this thing, the option, to the production company of a star whose name everybody would recognize, but I don't want to name him right now. And I went through this six-month hyperactive period of flying out to Los Angeles every other week and meeting with the production company. They're putting together the script from this thing. And what I learned from this was fascinating, that there are two stages to raising money, apparently, for putting together a movie. The first is the production stage, or the pre-production stage. There's a name for it, development stage. And then the second is the production, the actual making of the movie. And if you don't raise your development money, then you don't get to production. And the development money is not necessarily a lot of cash. It's like a couple $100,000, $500,000, maybe $1 million. And that's enough to get basically the marketing package together and enough stuff done, get the script done and everything, so that then, you know, a studio will say, okay, we're going to go into production with this thing. We were trying to get I wasn't involved. I just got the cash for the advance, but I was there. And this production company was trying to get the production money, the development money, to make this thing into a movie. And they told me that if I would write into the script, that the heroes were smoking, that they could get $100,000 if the hero per hero smoking, and $50,000 per minor figure smoking, and they could get even more if we got a major star to smoke. This was in 1988.
Okay. That's very interesting. In 1990, there was a voluntary tobacco industry ban on paid product placements. But before that, there was our significant record due to the litigation in 1998 that revealed a lot of tobacco industry documents. But in 1988, the best example is that Philip Morris paid $350,000 to get Lark brand cigarette into License to Kill. And
yeah, well, see, now that's a product placement like that. See, this is where it gets really sneaky, and I am convinced this is still going on, because I used to work in the advertising business, and I know what a product placement is.
Yep.
And they were not asking me to identify, or the scriptwriter, to identify a brand.
Mm-hmm.
All they wanted was somebody smoking, and the money wasn't coming from a tobacco company. Everybody was really clear about this. The money was coming from an investment group that participated in making movies, a third-party investment group with a very innocuous-sounding name, which I don't remember now, that was, everybody understood, a front organization for tobacco money. A backdoor way, and it was an industry trade group. It wasn't a company. And they didn't care what these people smoked, as long as they smoked something. And my understanding was that in the 90s, the tobacco company stopped doing product placements, which is where, you know, you watch a movie and you see a can of Coke, it's because somebody paid to have it there. You
right.
see, you know, any kind of, any brand name, it's, you know that somebody made some money on that, than people making the movie on this. But this was, this is even more insidious than that.
Yeah. And if you look, there's been several recent studies in the past 3 years from a group of Dartmouth researchers, and the most recent one was released in June of this year in Lancet. But if you look at the amount of movies that contain smoking, they looked at the top 250 movies from 1988 to 1997, intentionally looking at some pre-ban and post-ban, and 85% of these movies had smoking in them. And this isn't just R movies or PG-13, but this even includes a few G movies. So you have smoking in everything from Disney movies to, you know, Beverly Hills Cop to a whole range in between.
Yeah, and, see, I'm convinced they're still doing this, and they're doing it in the development stage where it's not big bucks, it's not conspicuous, it's not even, you're not even dealing with the studio at that point. You're dealing with a company that's putting together the production to try and sell it to the studio. And so, you know, this stuff probably, anyhow, I'm off on a tangent here.
Well, but it's a good tangent because it's a very good one, especially since the World Health Organization actually made this the theme of their World No Tobacco Day this past year, fashion and film, because of the dual effect of Hollywood. It's not just affecting the United States, but obviously about half of the revenue of Hollywood comes from international community. And it's not just Hollywood that's doing this, but they just released a study on Bollywood, the other largest film producer, and you have 76% of the movies contained tobacco in those in one survey, and those were movies between 1991 and 2002. So when film has a not just correlational effect with teen smoking, for example, but this most recent study showed that the number they gave was 52% of initiation behavior starting to smoke by teens can actually be attributed to seeing smoking in movies, and that the more they saw
more than half of
smoking
it.
Yeah, more than half, and it was actually a linear relationship. So the more smoking incidences they were exposed to, the more likely they were going to be to smoke. So this is a very clear problem, and there's actually quite a few organizations working to encourage Hollywood to basically make smoking a reason to give movies an R rating, which they suggest will probably either will more likely pull a lot of smoking out of movies because the producers would rather have them rated as PG-13.
Yeah, although on the other hand, it may well make it even more glamorous, you know. Oh, boy, look at that. Boy, I'd like to be like that guy. I mean, who wants to be like people in PG movies? Everybody wants to be like the guys in the R movies, you know. So, anyway, pardon the rant there. But the tobacco industry now has claimed the legal right to lie. Are you familiar with this, Eric?
I am not in that way that... Or maybe you should clarify in which way.
Okay. Well, I'll come back to that later then.
Okay.
What else do you see happening with the tobacco industry and the and advertising and what is? Well, first of all, how do you respond to those folks who say, "Hey, it's legal. Get over it. These people have a right to advertise. We have a right to buy their products and use them. It's legal. What, you know? Stop trying to save us from ourselves."
Right. But when you look at the global statistics of how many people this is killing, you have 4.9 million deaths a year are associated with tobacco usage. That, of course, has massive further ramifications, including increases in public health care costs, and obviously just the tremendous tragedy that this triggers. And it would be one thing if it was not an incredibly addictive drug and had it been a transparent process, but as we all know now, the tobacco industry has been very manipulative in its behavior and continues to do so in the developing world, where they still use tactics that are perhaps less used in the U.S. and developed markets. So it's not so simple as to say, well, you know, it's a legal thing.
I would even go beyond that. I would say that to folks who say things like that, you know, part of living in a society part of being together in a constitutional democratic republic or whatever you want to call our government, part of living together in a society is agreeing that there are some things that we are going to collectively do and some things we're going to collectively not do. We're going to stop at red lights. We're going to stop at stop signs. We're going to drive a certain speed limit. We constrain our freedoms constantly in order to promote what's called the public good. And if the deaths from tobacco are causing harm to the public good, not just the moral harm of death, but the cost of disease and lost wages and, I mean, you know, the economic costs, then we can collectively say this is something that isn't real useful. And, yeah, okay, it's grandfathered in, it's legal. We stopped heroin in 1923 or whenever it was, but we're not, you know, and cocaine, but somehow we missed tobacco. But we're not going to encourage it, at least. You know, it's that would be my response, I think, to the foaming at the mouth liberty types who say, you know, get out of, you know, don't stop trying to save me from myself. Well, I'm not trying to save you from yourself, but it's
but optimistic too that if you've been following the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, the fact that this first ever global health treaty has been passed focused on tobacco. And already in the last 2 weeks that it has been opened to be signed on, already 40 countries and the European community have signed on to this. And it will, when ratified, if ratified, it will create a comprehensive ad ban in the countries that have ratified it. It will increase warning labels on tobacco packets to 30% of the packet and also encourages increased taxes and smoke-free public spaces, which both of which really have a significant effect on discouraging smoking behavior and reducing smoking behavior.
Right.
So
good.
I hope that the future is becoming less friendly to tobacco for the benefit of the public.
Okay, now here's the tobacco. Here's how the tobacco industry is going to be coming at you. When this country was founded, the very clear notion was that human beings have rights. And whenever humans get together and create anything, whether it's a corporation, a civic organization, a church, or even a government, the government of the United States, that institution of humans does not have rights, it only has privileges. And the Constitution, for example, constrains the privileges of government as opposed to giving rights to humans. So there is a Bill of Rights attached to it, but as Jefferson said in his letters, it's redundant. And so we are the holders of the rights. Now, according to lawyers, in 1886, the Supreme Court, and it actually didn't do this. I wrote a book about this called Article Protection.
Great.
Well, the Supreme Court didn't actually say corporations should have rights, but the court reporter, John Chandler Bancroft Davis, a former railroad lawyer, railroad president, rather, in his headnote on the case, which is not legally binding, it's just a commentary, said, and I quote, corporations are persons under the 14th Amendment and entitled to equal protection under the law. As a result of that, corporations have been claiming constitutional protections and human rights. They've claimed the 4th Amendment right of privacy. They've claimed the 14th Amendment right of equal protection, which is why you can't stop a Walmart now because they say that you're being discriminated against. They've claimed, right on 5th Amendment rights of against taking, against double jeopardy, against self-incrimination. I have 1st Amendment rights of free speech. And now Nike recently has claimed that the right to free speech includes the right to lie, the corporate right to free speech includes the right to deceive. And here in The Ecologist, May 2003, the British magazine, they say, U.S. tobacco industry has dismissed claims of fraudulent advertising and invoked free speech safeguards in the U.S. Constitution to defend its pronouncements about cigarettes, the New York Times has reported. The U.S. Justice Department is currently demanding that the biggest U.S. cigarette makers be ordered to forfeit $289 billion in profits derived from a half century of fraudulent and dangerous marketing practices. The New York Times said the department has accused the industry of, quote, running what amounts to a criminal enterprise by manipulating nicotine levels, lying about the dangers of tobacco, and directing their multi-billion-dollar advertising campaigns at children, end quote. And the industry is responding, saying, we have the right to lie to people. All those years we lied to and they're going to actually start saying, you know, let's roll back this is the tort reform, the Republican agenda of, you know, you and I should not have the right to sue these corporations if they harm us. So I just wanted to warn you about that. And are you seeing things like that coming on the horizon where there's blowback, the tobacco industry's fighting back?
I haven't on the immediate horizon, not at least in this most blatant way, at least. I know the other part of the framework convention, it also encourages governments to, through litigation, start putting pressure onto tobacco companies. But and I guess there has been response to some of the most aggressive anti-tobacco advocates. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the American Legacy Foundation, but they actually, for the first time, are really targeting teens in a way that teens can relate to, very aggressively, very kind of anti-establishment, and challenging teens not to smoke, not because it's bad for their health, which is not an effective strategy.
That's great.
Because they're being manipulated by the tobacco industry. And the
although
industry,
they don't have the billions of the tobacco industry. We're talking with Eric Asadorian of the World Watch Institute, www.worldwatch.org, a staff researcher there. Eric, thank you very much for being on the program today. I appreciate your being available to us, and we hope to have you back again in the future. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor We the People. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
They finally did it. A weight loss formula that's guaranteed to work. And it comes from Metabolife, the leader in weight loss for years. It's new Metabolife Ultra, with an appetite suppressant and formulated for sustained energy. Its key ingredients have been clinically tested and shown to help you lose weight. In fact, we're so sure that Metabolife Ultra will work for you that we absolutely guarantee your results. Go to Metabolife.com for all the details. It's available now at Walmart. Ask for it by name. Metabolife Ultra.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
a few more years on them.
No. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to Animal Talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Molloy Show.
Show.
According to Abbas, immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George, God has been talking to me. God told me, not you, God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
So they're coming to take me away, ha-ha.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Democracy in 2004. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. The EPA says that tobacco smoke contains, secondhand smoke contains 4,000 chemical compounds, 60 of which are known to cause cancer. There are only 15 compounds in the entire earth, on the entire 80,000 chemicals in production, and all the things that we know of, there are only 15 pollutants that the EPA has listed as Class A carcinogens, including asbestos, radon, benzene, and cigarette smoke. Cigarettes kill 10 million people a year worldwide. In the United States alone, last year, 430,700 human beings, one at a time, died from cigarette smoke. 50% of all people who smoke more than 15 years end up dying of smoking-related illnesses. 87% of lung cancer deaths are caused by smoking. One out of every 10 adult deaths in the planet is caused by smoking. And yet in 1994, Philip Morris President William Campbell, according to U.S. News and World Report, testified before Congress that he strenuously objected to the idea that nicotine is an addictive drug. Remember when those guys stood up there and raised their hands and said, I swear to God that I will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? One of them is now the president of IBM, I believe, Lou Gerstner. He was then the head of RJR. We got this guy from Philip Morris. Whatever happened? Why? Bill Clinton lied about having sex. Nothing happened. These guys lie about killing 10 million people a year. Oh, but they have the right to lie. Louise says, no, they didn't. They raised their hands and swore under oath. That's when you don't have the right to lie. You must tell the truth. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Thanks for joining us. See you again soon.
It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Hi,
truth seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. President Bush isn't pulling any punches.
My answer is bring them on. We got the force necessary to deal with the security situation.
Bush says the U.S. is well-equipped to deal with the security problems in post-war Iraq. In White House comments, Bush was asked about those who are trying to disrupt the peaceful transformation of Iraq and the growing clamor to get other nations involved in reconstruction. Meanwhile, the president is optimistic about Mideast peace efforts.
We are pleased with the progress in the Middle East. I want to thank the parties in the Middle East for willing to take a risk for peace.
In White House comments, Bush expressed cautious optimism about the progress of the U.S.-backed roadmap for Mideast peace.
Vancouver.
Vancouver, Canada was chosen by the International Olympic Committee to host the 2010 Winter Olympics. A crowd in Vancouver watching the announcement via satellite burst into loud cheers and held up Canadian flags as the host city for the Games was revealed. South Korea and Austria were also competing to host the event. Three employees of the Modine manufacturing plant in Jefferson City, Missouri, were shot to death last night by another worker who later killed himself in front of the city's police station. Five additional employees of the plant were wounded in the shooting spree. The shooter, who is said to have been in his 20s, also worked at the plant. Prosecutors are disappointed by a judge's decision to grant a change of venue in the trial of Washington, D.C. area sniper suspect Lee Boyd Malvo. Commonwealth attorney Robert Horan says the move to Chesapeake will delay justice.
Definitely will take far longer going down there than it would have up here, just because of the availability of witnesses and timing of witnesses.
Malvo stands accused, along with John Allen Muhammad, of carrying out last fall's D.C. area serial sniper shooting that left more than a dozen dead.
Hello, Dental Group. Ms. Cole? Sounds like a nasty toothache. Aren't you on vacation?
Camping.
Well, for temporary relief until you see the dentist, get maximum strength Ambisol.
Ambisol?
The same pain reliever in the same strength the dentist rubs on gums to start relieving pain on contact.
Oh, really?
You can't get stronger pain relief without a prescription. Use only as directed.
Ambisol.
Yes, Miss Cole. Maximum strength Ambisol. Dent is strong, so the pain is gone.
All right, folks, while we have a minute, let's go up to the chopper with Brad Paul, get a traffic update. Brad, what do you see up there?
Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Nothing you're going to want to hear about, unfortunately. You can expect major delays on the interstate. An overturned tractor trailer's got traffic backed up for about 25 miles. It's a real bad situation, Scott, but I do have good news.
What's that, Brad?
I just saved a load of money on car insurance by switching to GEICO.
See how much you could save. Visit GEICO.com. GEICO, 15 minutes online could save you 15% on car insurance.
The city believed to be the birthplace of Christ is once again under Palestinian control. Israel completed the handover of Bethlehem today to Palestinian police as part of a condition of the U.S.-backed roadmap to peace. Walmart has expanded its anti-discrimination policy to include gay and lesbian employees. Speaking today about the move, Walmart's Vice President for Communications, Mona Williams, told the New York Times, "It's the right thing to do for our employees." The new policy adds sexual orientation to a list of things that won't affect equal opportunity employment.
Let's read this one.
My favorite!
You want me to read her bedtime story? You have a bad headache.
Yeah, but I can't let it ruin our story time.
The moment of choice. Which will work better on your headache? Tylenol or Advil? Truth is, you'll feel better faster with Advil Liquid Gels. These advanced liquid-filled capsules rush relief where you need it. They're proven to work faster, stronger, better than Tylenol on tough pain.
The
end.
Good night, big girl.
Good night, big guy.
For better headache relief, advance to Advil.
Iran is offering Russia a chance to build more nuclear power stations in the Islamic Republic. Roxana Severi reports from Tehran.
Iran's atomic energy chief told Russian media his country wants to build many more nuclear power stations and would like Moscow to take part. Moscow is helping Tehran to build the Bushehr plant in southern Iran, which is due to go online in 2005. Iran says its nuclear program only aims to produce electricity, but the U.S. accuses Tehran of pursuing nuclear weapons and has been pressuring Moscow to curb its nuclear activities in Iran. Some U.S. officials say the waste from the Bushehr plant could be reprocessed to make nuclear weapons, but Tehran says an agreement to return all the waste to Russia will be signed in the shortest time possible. Roxana Saberi, Tehran.
And the finals are underway tonight on Fame on NBC. Tonight, two more finalists are eliminated. I'm Monica DeSantis, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Anti-lock brakes, seat belts, and airbags. All ounces of prevention safety that equip today's cars. But when we come back, I'll tell you where there's a pound of cure, just in case you need it.
Asphalt, rubber, metal, speed. This is racing for Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Matt Kenseth, and John Andretti. There's one more key to racing, Champion Spark Plugs. They race different makes of cars, Chevy, Pontiac, Dodge, Ford. But they all trust Champion because they all have the same destination, the winner's circle. Champion powers all.
Be sure to ask your service technician or auto parts retailer for Champion Spark Plugs.
Today's technology-equipped cars are designed to prevent accidents. But when they happen, it's technology again, this time to the rescue. 1,000 cars in upstate New York are testing automated collision notification. This system uses in-vehicle sensors to detect a crash and then employs a satellite and cellular phone system to relate the severity and location of the accident directly to 911. After receiving this information, the operator then opens a voice line and dispatches emergency assistance. Wow, that sounds like 2 pounds of cure to me. I'm Bobby Likas, brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to our program. This is the Tom Hartman Show on the IE America Radio Network, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, broadcasting from the depths of outer space. We need to put an echo in there. On the Sirius radio satellite system, Sirius Channel 145, and also broadcasting live on the Internet from radiopower.org, ieamericaradio.com, and archived at whiterosesociety.org, an organization that we mentioned in the first hour, one of the active student resistance groups against Adolf Hitler back in the 1930s and 1940s, a group that took some real, the very, very brave young men and women who paid with their lives, virtually all of them, the original White Rose Society. God bless them. Thomas Jefferson. Somebody in our chat room was talking about education, how it seems that liberals are well educated, and I remember the controversy around when Ronald Reagan shut down the program. Cut funding to the University of California system, where if you lived in California, you could go to college for free. And this was, you know, one of the crown jewel of California for for nearly a century. And of course, many university systems around the United States had similar programs, state universities. And I think most were probably started that way. I'm not an expert on the history of state universities, but certainly when Thomas Jefferson began the first state university in the United States, the University of Virginia, that's what it was all about, was offering absolutely free college education to anybody who really wanted to learn and had the ability. And Jefferson, just interestingly, just this morning, I wrote a piece here that I'm going to be sending up to Common Dreams tomorrow. And in it, I've got this little quote from Jefferson. This is in a letter he wrote to James Madison in 1789. And he said, finally, whether peace is best preserved by giving energy to the government or information to the people, this last, information to the people, is the most certain and the most legitimate engine of government. Educate and inform the whole mass of the people. Enable them to see that it is in their interest to preserve peace and order, and they will preserve themselves. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty, they being an educated populace. And I think that's just an extraordinary sentiment and an important one. What's going to happen with politics? Is America being... John Kennedy... I was going through some of Kennedy's speeches a while ago, and I came across a couple of little clips. One that I want to share with you first, which is it's a little bit off topic, but this is the Republicans, when the Bush tax cuts were being promoted, there was this group that had come out, and they were using Kennedy's name, and they were using his image in their ads, and saying that John Kennedy would have been in favor of Bush's tax cuts. And of course, he wouldn't have been. John Kennedy, while yes, he did lower the top marginal tax rate, he did so because nobody was paying it anyway, because there were all these loopholes. So he said, let's lower this symbol and let's close the loopholes so that the rich are actually paying more taxes. That was the net effect of the Kennedy tax cut in total. And let's make it fairer. Let's also cut taxes down toward the bottom. And it worked out quite well. And so Kennedy himself saying that he wants to be on the record about this. And I thought this is John Kennedy talking about his tax policy. Three little splices from one of his press conferences.
Yes, I have stated in both the debates, and state again, that I believe in a balanced budget and have supported that concept during my 14 years in the Congress. The only two times when an unbalanced budget is warranted would be during a serious recession, and we had that in 58 in an unbalanced budget of $12 billion, or a national emergency where there should be large expenditures for national defense, which we had in World War II and during part of the Korean War.
So that's the setup.
Third, I think it's possible to gain a $700 million to $1 billion through tax changes, which I believe would close up loopholes on dividend withholding, on expense accounts.
So he wants to close up the loopholes on dividend withholding and on expense accounts. This is the topic.
So in my judgment, we would spend more money in this administration on aid to education. We'd spend more money on housing. We'd spend more money, and I hope more wisely, on defense than this administration has done. But I believe that the next administration should work for a balanced budget, and that would be my intention. Mr. Nixon misstates my figures constantly, which is, of course, his right.
And Mr. Nixon was not the only one who misstated his figures constantly.
But the fact of the matter is, here is where I stand, and I just want to have it on the public record.
Yeah, and so thank you, Mr. Kennedy. It is, President Kennedy, it is on the public record. And so now, Ralph Nader says he's seriously considering running in 2004. He's told Green Party officials he's interested in running, is encouraging draft Nader movements. This is the same thing he did in 2000. So he's actually, the Green Party officials are saying publicly they have been contacted by Nader, apparently, according to this news story anyway. This is in USA Today. Tom Squitieri, Nader considering another try at the White House, and that he is actually doing the groundwork stuff. And remember Ralph Nader. Now, we know that Jeb and Catherine bounced about 90,000 people in primarily Democratic districts off the voters' rolls with their illegal purge of the voter registration rolls in Florida just in months prior to the 2000 election, and that this is really how the election was stolen. But on top of that, Ralph Nader got 97,488 votes in Florida. So if he hadn't been on the ballot, even with all those, even with the 90,000 people that Harris and what's-her-name bounced off the rolls, Bush still could have won. A lot of people are still very upset about Ralph Nader. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 is our phone number today on the Tom Hartman program. It is 14 minutes after the hour, and Tony in Waukegan, Illinois, is on the line. Tony, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Hey, Tony. I'm great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Doing fine. Doing fine. I just can't believe Nader. What is he just wanting to give the Republicans another 4 years? I mean, is that what he is aiming for? Because that's exactly what he's going to do.
Yeah, well, that's what he thinks he's going to do, apparently.
If he splits the progressive vote at all, I mean, you just said it, you know, down in Florida, 90-some thousand votes. God, if we had just got 1% of that, just 1% of that, we'd still have Bush in the White House because he would have found some other way to cheat, but it would have been less legitimate, even less legitimate.
You know what I think is going on here, Tony, and you know, do a reality check with me if you think I'm wrong. It seems that both on the right and on the left, there are people who are in the old Carl Jung had this notion of judgers and perceivers that has made its way into the Myers-Briggs psychological evaluation test. And judgers are people who see the world in black and white. It's yes or no, and there's only two ways, my way or the highway sort of thing. You know, and perceivers are people who see the world in shades of gray. And the, you know, traditional wisdom is sort of that the extremes on the left, on the right, the super conservatives, are the judgers, and that the moderate, middle-of-the-road folks are the perceivers. But I think that there's judges on the left as well, and I think Ralph Nader's one. And I think he's willing, I think he thinks that he's putting principle above practicality, and practicality be damned, principle's more important. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a lot of that, actually, on the left. I think, as a matter of fact, if I look at the Green Party, you know, I think of the Green Party as being people who are, you know, mostly disaffected Democrats. You know, the people who are disappointed with the way the National Democratic Party is running and not standing up for the issues that they once stood for so strongly and firmly and and ungivingly, and I think that's okay, but I think these people are, you know, it's like the old saying, you know, they're going to cut off their nose to spite their face.
Right, so you're in favor of a more practical approach to politics here.
Well,
today.
When,
so
you're when you're talking about practical versus, you know, I'd rather have, you know, a Democrat in the office that I know is going to give me some of what I'm looking for, as opposed to a guy like Bush, who's a front man, who's going to give me none of what we need.
Okay, great. Tony, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate the call. And yeah, that's the practical side of politics, and that's the side that is being promoted by many Democrats. But again, we have these judges and perceivers. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. And Linda's on the line from Cupertino, California. Welcome to the program today, Linda.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. I was talking to some Green members. I'm a Democrat, and I've been communicating with them for years, and they said this year that they're less interested in supporting Nader and more interested in supporting a Democratic candidate, and they mentioned Kerry would be someone that they could vote for if they absolutely had to.
Interestingly, I heard Ralph Nader yesterday on Crossfire. They asked him which of the Democrats he would support, and he said that he knew John Kerry when he came back from Vietnam, and he still thought very highly of him. And
yeah.
I was going, whoa, I need to learn more about John Kerry.
Yes, I've heard that among Greens, several Greens that I've talked to. But I think what we would really enjoy this year, next year, I mean, in the election, would be another really strong third-party candidate like Perot.
On the right.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's where the real strong third party needs to come from, not from the left. And what is Perot doing, or what is his party doing? I mean, does anybody know what's going on?
They're in complete disarray. They have completely they disintegrated basically into this left right squabble because they never defined themselves as left or right. And a lot of people in Perot's party, the name of it is escaping me at the moment, but thought that they were in a left wing party,
mm-hmm.
and you know, kind of a populist progressive. And others thought that they were in a right wing populist party, a Pat Buchanan type party. Mm-hmm. And their populism they agreed on, but their politics they didn't. And it's as far as I can tell, the thing is gone.
I would like to see a fragmentation of the right wing electorally in this country. I don't know how much effect Buchanan is going to have in.
Oh, he's going to stay out. He's a you know, everybody knows on the right which side their bread is buttered on, and there's so much money floating around on the right.
No, there's a lot of stuff that Buchanan has been complaining about, I feel that, you know, with another third party taking independence and Greens and stuff away from from Bush would be a really good thing. And
I agree. I just don't think it's going to happen, Linda. But it'll be interesting. I mean, you know, maybe we could go out and fund one and say no. But we shouldn't even talk like that. Okay, Linda, thanks for calling. I appreciate the call and I appreciate your point. What impact will Ralph Nader have on this thing? What's going to happen with the Democrats? What's going to happen for them? By the way, I just got an email yesterday that there's a town meeting tonight for the 465 of them around the United States for Howard Dean. So that's rolling on. We have Tim in Hartford, Mike in Milwaukee, and Steve in Portland on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES is the number, and we'll be taking these calls right after we come back from this break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Wouldn't it be great if you could get everything you need for successful estate planning in one package? Well, now you can. The new Master Estate Kit offers a collection of legal power that would cost you $500 or more if prepared by a lawyer. Here's what you get. First, a legal will kit, one praised by nearly 500,000 buyers. Second, a living will kit that assures your wishes will be followed in case of an irreversible injury or illness. And third, a power of attorney kit that includes all the required forms. Order today and we'll include the new Family Legal Guide. It answers all your questions about small claims court, landlord agreements, personal bankruptcy, and much more. An $80 value, the complete Master Estate Kit costs only $39.95. For immediate delivery of the Master Estate Kit and your free family legal guide, call 1-800-221-0393. Pay only $39.95 plus shipping. Every kit carries an unlimited money-back guarantee. Call 1-800-221-0393 now. That's 1-800-221-0393.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why don't you put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
There is no more fundamental axiom of American freedom than the familiar statement, Harry Truman said. In a free country, we punish men for crimes they commit, but never, never for the opinions they have. Ralph Nader's an extraordinary guy. He's done a lot of good for this nation. He has saved probably hundreds of thousands of lives and improved the quality of life of all of us in ways that we and our children and our children's children should be grateful to for centuries. And yet there's some folks who are a little upset with him and the folks a little concerned about him. Rob Call, in his op-ed piece on opednews.com today, points out that the Democrats recently have raised as much money as George Bush has. This is interesting. Where is all this going? Tim in Hartford, Connecticut has called 1-800-TALK-YES to be on the program, 1-800-825-5937. Tim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom, I'm one of thousands and thousands of people out there that are actively encouraging Ralph to continue to run, and others, including Cynthia McKinney, possibly as a vice presidential candidate. The common mistakes I've already heard from your listeners is the fact that thinking that these were automatically Democrats, and poll after poll has showed that the Greens are not Democrats, disinfected Democrats who are, you know, trying to, you know, shift the party back to the left. And what's,
but they're
really
pulling non-voters out.
In many cases, and that's what people really don't understand. The senators who were elected in the state of Washington and Michigan were largely elected because of Greens, because Greens didn't have a senatorial candidate there, and they went and voted for the liberal Democrat candidate in that particular races. So we don't ever
while they were voting for Nader for president, you mean?
They were voting for Nader for president, and you've talked about this before. If we had the idea of who our first choice, who our second choice might be, I think elections would be a lot fairer. But unfortunately, in this country, people don't really understand politics in many ways. The Democrats do not want somebody pulling them to the left, like the Greens, and Nader is challenging. So many people, Kerry and everybody else, have voted for these terrible trade agreements. They voted for this last war. You know, Kucinich is the only one that, you know, many of the Greens would consider voting for, but unfortunately he's a committed Democrat. And so, you know, Ralph is trying to encourage people also in a very grassroots level all across this country to get more people elected as Greens and push this agenda away from the corporate power that the Democrats have. I mean, they've essentially become...
But Tim, until we have instant runoff voting or proportional representation, a third party is always going to harm the
positions.
Oh,
that's simply not true, because we've elected 170 people across this country. We're shaping the agendas in city councils and being state reps in New Jersey.
Yeah, but not to anything of consequence. I mean, if you put a Green into Congress... Well, okay, we got Bernie Sanders who's an independent, you got Jim Jeffords who's an independent, so I guess my logic doesn't hold up there because they just vote with the Democrats.
They would, you know, there are many progressive and very liberal Republicans like Chafee, Snow, and others who might form new alliances with. But unfortunately, you know, because the Democrats still take all this soft money, and you see Dean already, the darling of the liberal set, already shifting, trying to be more centralist for the death penalty, trying to have it both ways as far as the Middle East and promoting the very aggressive pro-Israel policy at the expense of Middle East and stuff. Some of these candidates, you know, out there are not, you know, they are really much more centralist in their approach. And I think
Dean, by the way, is not he shifted on the death penalty, but he hasn't shifted anything. He's always been a centrist. When he was the governor of Vermont, he was a centrist.
Do you think, though, that most people consider him the new darling of the left? I think it's
I think that the media has misrepresented him in some ways and over-amped his opposition to the Iraqi war as if that turned him into the most screaming leftist on earth, which is not the case. Tim, thanks for the call and very important and useful points here. Stick around, we'll be right back after this break. We've got Mike and Steve on the line, and we'll continue in just a moment.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Laura Miller.
A victory for free speech and workers' rights online from the California Supreme Court. The case involved Ken Hamidi, a former engineer for the Intel Corporation. After being fired in 1995 over a workers' compensation dispute, Hamidi began emailing all Intel employees with exposés on the company's unfair labor practices. Intel went to court and got an injunction barring Hamidi from sending emails to Intel, claiming that by doing so he was trespassing on private property. But a 4-3 majority of California's highest court has ruled Hamidi was engaging in nothing more than free speech, much like a protester would standing on the sidewalk in front of Intel's headquarters holding a sign. And because of his status as a former Intel employee, the court believed Hamidi's emails didn't fit the definition of spam either, as he was actually passing along information of interest to other Intel workers.
The U.S. Customs Service is under fire for allowing cocoa harvested by slaves into the country. U.S. law prohibits the importation of goods manufactured by prison or slave labor, and labor advocates say that should include cocoa from the Ivory Coast, much of which is produced by indentured children for major chocolate processors like Nestle, Cargill, and Archer Daniels Midland. Terry Collinsworth is with the International Labor Rights Fund. His group recently filed suit against the Customs Service after petitioning the agency for a year to prevent the importation of slave-harvested cocoa into the U.S.
Our initial effort here will be to ask a court to order an administrative agency to implement a law as required by Congress.
The Ivory Coast produces nearly half of the world's cocoa supply, and the International Labor Rights Fund estimates that nearly all chocolate sold in the U.S. contains some cocoa that was picked by indentured children.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Hi, this is Bobby Likas, host of Bobby Likas Car Clinic, inviting you to join me Saturday mornings from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern here on IE America Radio Network. People love to talk cars, and local sponsors know that. But IE America Radio has other shows as well. Shows that your listeners will love, that will attract local sponsors, and shows that will set your station above the rest. Go to IEAmericaRadio.com and take a look and listen for yourself to see what's available. That's IEAmericaRadio.com.
the best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm in a hurry to get things done. Oh, I rush and rush until life's no fun. All I really gotta do is live and die, but I'm in a hurry and don't know why.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. In our chat room, quite a discussion here, collateral or lateral, what, correlating, running out of words here, with our discussion on Kerry and Dean and the Greens. So I say I like Graham could be like Lieberman. He takes some early poncho. One of the folks says Greens are cool. They are the first non-communist global party. I thought that was interesting. I had never thought of that before, and it's like, whoa, yeah. Somebody else says, without Gore putting out a lousy campaign, he could have gotten into the White House. Without Gore and Lieberman giving up in the election battle, while Michael Moore and the Greens are still fighting the recount, Gore could have gotten the White House. Brain Shrub says, let's have a revolution. Let's all flush our toilets at the same time and flood the system. Then during the confusion, we storm D.C. and take the Congress. And on it goes. Tony Blair is the third way, just as Gore is. Interesting, interesting discussion. Go to TomHartmanShow.com and click chat room, and it'll take you into the chat room. 1-800-TALK-YES is the number to be on the program. Two very quick announcements. When Democracy Failed is the title of the article that was the first hour. And if you go to TomHartman.com and click on the link to Democracy Writings, you'll find it. And next week, our oldest daughter is getting married, and Louise and I are going off for that. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I will not be here. Don't worry, we'll be back on Thursday. So just letting you know, and a good friend of ours, Rama Schneider, who's a talk show host here in Vermont, is going to be filling in. Mike in Milwaukee's on the line, 1-800-TALK-YES. Mike, thanks for calling. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Hi. Thank you. A couple callers ago, maybe two or three callers ago, a woman was talking about some offshoots from the Republican Party running. But I just in relation to that, you're probably aware of the book Pigs at the Trough by Arianna Huffington.
I am. I have it.
Oh, and then there's Kevin Phillips. A lot of people that were associated with the conservative group are writing books that tend to look more and more like something that might have been written by Democrats. And I'm just wondering.
Sure.
Well, first
David
off,
David Brock too.
Huh?
David Brock too, Blinded by the Right.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that most people that are conservative don't want to listen to anything. They just automatically dismiss anything that Dems have to say or Greens have to say, but coming from the right, they might listen to some reason. The comment that I really called to make, however, was I'm voting Green, and I voted Green last time because Gore didn't act like a Democrat, and after he the election was stolen from him. Then he started talking about health care and some other things, the kinds of things that that are important to me, minimum wage. They don't want to talk about that because the moment they start talking like Democrats, they see that as a liability. And,
yeah, I had a sense that it was kind of a poll-driven campaign.
Exactly.
Short on passion and long on intellect.
And I like Kucinich, and if Kerry or Lieberman, if they're going to be the people that are out there running for the Dems, then I'll vote Green again, and I'll vote again and again until they get the message. This is the only way I have to send the message. They send their fundraising, they're guised as polls to find out what people feel. But they're there for fundraising, but they don't listen to that. They don't listen to what the people have to say and what our needs are. 50 million people without health insurance. Didn't you have somebody on recently about the minimum wage, Raise the Floor?
Yeah, we did.
Very interesting.
RaiseTheFloor.org, as I recall, is the website.
And you got so many people that are just underpaid and underinsured and just on and on and on. I don't want to go on, but that if the Dems don't want to pay attention to that, they will never get my vote there. One other thing real quick I just want to mention is when Clinton was running in the primaries for that first election, and I looked at all the candidates, I happened to like what's his name from Iowa, Tom... it doesn't matter. But
Tom Harkin, is it?
Harkin, yeah. Tom Harkin. Yeah. I didn't want to confuse it with Tom Hartman. But anyway, what I noticed in the media was they showed all of the candidates except for Bill Clinton, with sweaty armpits and looking disheveled, and they made him look Moonbeam Jerry and on and on. But when they showed Bill Clinton, he appeared on the front cover of Newsweek magazine with every hair in place. I'm a professional photographer, and I could tell that was done in a studio with more than adequate lighting and a stylist there to do the hair and everything. These people had already picked Bill Clinton, and when he got in, he signed the GATT and NAFTA treaty, and he did what the Republicans wanted. He kicked the welfare moms off of welfare, then sent the jobs overseas. So these guys were Republicans, and I'll never vote for a centrist again. So anyway, that's my lesson that was learned.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Thanks for sharing that, and I think there's some wisdom in that. I have some concerns about the practicality of it. I think if your house is on fire and somebody's having a loud argument inside, it's more important to put out the fire first. We've got a fire here in George Bush. Well, it's an imperfect metaphor, but anyhow. Steve, 1-800-TALK, yes, is the number, 1-800-825-5937. And Steve in Portland, welcome aboard. Steve, you're on the air.
Hey, thanks a lot. I'd echo a lot of what the previous caller said. I worked for Nader in 2000, and I would just like to ask any liberal in the country, how can you blame us for anything in 2000 with the likes of Joe Lieberman on the Democratic Party ticket? I mean, he's the most conservative Democratic senator.
Yeah, he is. I don't think that most people realize that, frankly, during the 2000 election, though.
Well, I sure did. I mean, you know, he works for the big insurance companies out of Connecticut, pretty much. Tort reform is at the top of his agenda. He's against affirmative action. He's a big pusher of the corporate-driven globalization. He's a major hawk on foreign policy. So how are we supposed to support this guy as a liberal? I mean, it's totally impossible, in my opinion. So give us a liberal, and we'll vote for him.
Okay. Well, let them. Steve, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate that. And I'm not in charge of it, but it's an interesting show to watch. 1-800-TALK, yes, 1-800-825-5937. If you'd like to weigh in on this, Justin in Memphis is on the line in Memphis, Tennessee, I'm assuming. Welcome to the program, Justin. What's your question?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to correct the previous caller.
Okay.
It's Sel Miller, not Joe Lieberman, is the most conservative senator.
You're right. You're right.
And I am a yellow dog Democrat. We'll never vote for a Republican. We'll never vote for a Green Party member. And this is what happened. I am, I guess I come from a long line of Democrats from the South. But I'm a self-described socialist. And so is my family. However.
Socialist in the European socialist, like the Norwegian socialist sense, as opposed to the USSR socialist sense. Right,
but
okay.
Howard Dean is our best candidate. And the thing is, and Nader is not. He really is not. And he is a spoiler. The thing is that people don't understand that you will never have a hard left candidate for the country, at least with the way people's opinion is. And that's not fair, I think, to have a hard left candidate running the country if that's not the majority. I mean, because then people are disenfranchised. Because the thing with a centrist candidate, and what happens there is that everyone gets a little piece of something. You know, and I know that sounds like I'm running very center or centrist. But I'm not. I'm really not, because I think Howard Dean will get enough votes and will have the power essentially to bring a lot of voters together, because Bush, of course, divided the country. I think Howard Dean could unite it.
Although Bush ran as a centrist, too, but
he is a complete
extremist.
Conservative.
Yeah, he's
I mean,
not
that's
just
why Pat Robertson said that he's going to take over the Christian coalition.
Right. One of the folks in our chat room here, Aaron, asked the question for you, Justin. Mm-hmm. What is a yellow dog? You want to describe? I used to live in Atlanta. I'm familiar with the phrase, but I'm sure you can do it.
Oh, sure. I will describe the yellow dog. Years and years ago, it happened to be that Democrats, well, of course, the South was strongly Democrat until everything changed. The party split-flopped a little bit. And... Mm-hmm. But years ago, it would be if anyone besides the Democrat was on the ticket. I mean, it could be the sorriest Democrat ever, but they would vote for him as long as if it was a yellow dog, they would vote for him. That's my understanding. I believe. I'm sure it has different variations. But
so loyal to the party.
very loyal.
So you're suggesting then, Justin, that some unity would be useful here. How do you unite the left and the right?
I'm sorry.
How do we unite? Well, this is a question that was just put to me.
How do we unite the common ground? I mean, the thing is, there's a lot of common ground. The blue collar conservatives are somewhat like regular centrist Democrats in the fact that they are looking for the same thing, minimum wage, and and things like that. If you really bring out there and you're really populist and you don't really care about the polls, you don't look at the polls. You don't let that drive you as Gore did. And also thing I wanted to talk about your other caller about how he said that Clinton was, that they had already picked him. I don't think that's true. I really don't. I think Clinton was a very conservative, president, but I don't think they picked him. In fact, they hate him. The Republicans hate him because they think he's a danger. And the reason why they think he's a danger is because he's centrist. And therefore, he can meld more minds. He can control more people.
Right, that's the danger to the extremists.
Right, it's a danger because he is that moderate. But however, he can use that moderation to get his own agenda across that could potentially be leftist. That's the thing is, you have to be center in this country in order to get elected, and that's just it. However, someone like a Howard Dean, who is very liberal, however fiscally conservative, which I don't really care for, but I think he's the best candidate, could possibly get.
You think he might be able to pull it off? Okay, Justin, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate your sharing that with us, and it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out, and is Howard Dean a creation of the media, or is when John Kerry starts really getting his message out there, are people going to say, oh, gee, I should have voted for him instead? And you look at his use of the internet, Dean's use of the internet, it's remarkable. One of the folks in our chat room says, I hope Hillary would win one day and win so the neocons would keep their promises and leave the country. That's a good one. 1-800-TALK-YES is the phone number, 1-800-825-5937. And Rick in Santa Fe, New Mexico is on the program. Welcome aboard, Rick. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. I was happy to hear someone from my former home state. I, too, am a Tennessee Yellow Dog Democrat, and it was good to hear that. Rick,
the right is united. How do we do that on the left?
Pardon? That's the thing. We keep breaking apart. Look at what happened with the Anderson vote back in, when Reagan won. I would say he took a lot of votes away, maybe even swung the election to Reagan. We keep doing this. I don't know if it's a Republican sponsoring somebody or what. But we got the numbers last time.
Yeah, there actually are examples of Republicans offering, I mentioned one of them in one of my op-eds on Common Dreams, of the Republicans offering big bucks from the RNC in Washington, D.C.
New Mexico. They offered the Green Party a lot of money.
Yeah.
At least here they were, honest and forthright enough to turn it down.
Yeah. Well, I think probably most Greens are. I mean,
well,
there's
I don't
a lot
know.
Of integrity.
I mean, at least
the
they were here. That's all I
Green
can tell
Party.
You. But the one thing I wanted to talk about was Nader. Because this guy is a fraud. This guy has stock portfolios, that are pro-pollution, pro-military, pro or anti-environment, pro-death.
Rick, wait a second. First of all, I'm not sure I know how you know that. And secondly, even if that's true, what difference does it make?
Well, this is what
private
they're jumping
finances
on Gore.
Are none
of
our business.
This is one of the things they're jumping on Gore about.
You want to look at money, look at George Bush.
I completely agree. But what I'm trying to point out is that, you can't hold Nader up as this paragon of
liberalism. I don't think anybody's holding him up as a paragon. I think people are saying that he's saying that what he will do is what they want done.
I'm saying I don't think so. Not anybody who meets with Norquist, weekly, accepts the Republicans when they cheer him about putting Bush into office. Who has these secretive corporations that he has and make sure that no union is allowed in there. I don't see this guy is doing anything that we want
to
do.
Those are strong charges, Rick.
Well, I've
never seen him back
that up. I've read about them several different times in several different places.
Yeah. Well, if you have any solid source stuff for that, post it on our message board or drop me a note, because I'd like to look into it.
I will try to do that.
Nader,
the dark side, and several others.
Yeah. Okay. Rick, thanks for sharing that with us. I appreciate the call from Santa Fe. Thank you very much for being on the program. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, and Forrest in Kansas City, Missouri is on the line. Forrest, welcome to the program. What's up?
Wanted to add to what a few of the earlier callers said. I think the problem is with a lot of Democrats or liberals or progressives is they want to get everything at once. And the right realizes it's going to take them, you know, 20, 30 years, maybe even a little longer to get their agenda through. So they don't push
when they,
for
when
so
they
much
went down in 64 with Barry Goldwater, that's when they said we can't make this mistake again.
Yeah, and I think that the problem is you're never going to get everything you want in a candidate or in a or on an issue. You're going to get maybe half, 50, 60% of what you want, and you got to kind of take the good with the bad. And when you get a Democrat, you got a shot of getting somebody in there. You might get 50% of what you want during that maybe the 4 or 8 years he's in there, and then hopefully you get another Democrat after that and get another get a little more of what you want.
Right.
And you know, eventually, you're going to start. You know, things are going to start to go your way, but you're not going to get all of what you want at one time.
Yeah, the right has figured this out real solidly, and barring instant runoff voting or proportional representation, this is, in my opinion, this is the issue or an important issue for us.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. You know, we divide ourselves because Democrats just vote one issue.
Yeah.
And
well, a lot of them. And it used to be that way on the right, hopefully that will change. We'll see. I mean, you know, this is going to be a real interesting next, 16 months or something like that until the next election. This is the Tom Hartman Program. And Forrest, thank you for the call. I appreciate your calling in and sharing that with you. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
When the gas light comes on in your car, do you tap it to try to turn it off? When you get a flat tire, do you drive around hoping it will reinflate? No. But right now, you could be ignoring a battery problem, which is why there's DieHard Express, only at Sears Auto Center. DieHard Express is more than a battery service. It's a complete checkup for your car's electrical system. Our experts will look for common problems, and if it's the battery, we'll install a new DieHard, America's most preferred battery.
DieHard Express. Sears. Good life, great price. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express Lawsuit Funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now. Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Show.
Joining us now is Jason Campbell with the Christian Action Network.
Well, since 1991, the gay movement has gone down to Disney to do these gay days. You've had events where you've had Mickey Mouse with Goofy in sexual positions.
Ah! Homosexual movies are shown on the Disney transportation systems. And what kind of movies, for God's sake, do they show on these buses?
Triple X.
Oh, you're kidding.
If a child's riding beside one of the buses and looks up and says, Daddy, what is that on the television monitor?
Right.
It's going to be an embarrassing moment.
Oh, it'll be worse than embarrassing. The child will be scarred for life.
Right. That's what the homosexuals want.
Well, I know. They're after the kids. Now, the only thing I'm afraid of is somebody just tuned in the program and never heard the program before and just went, oh, Jesus, this guy is really a right-wing freak.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Be happy in every life. We have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy.
Is the real issue GOP broken promises? The betrayal of America by the cons, or is the real issue what candidate should the Democrats have? Interesting question. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. It's about 4 minutes before the hour. And I have an email here from David J. Sirota, Communications Director, U.S. House Appropriations Committee, Minority Representative David Obey's office. And it's called FY 2000 GOP Broken Promises. And it's a list with some details. Broken promise, overall education funding. Broken promise, no child left behind bill. Nope. Broken promise, special education. Broken promise, Title I funding. Broken promise, college education. Broken promise, National Institutes of Health funding. Healthcare safety net, bioterrorism preparedness, nursing shortage, unemployment, low-income heating assistance, and on it goes. For example, in April, the GOP loudly proclaimed in the conference report of the fiscal year 2004 budget resolution that they would provide a, quote, $3 billion increase from the previous year for the Department of Education, end quote. This bill falls far short of that promise, providing only $2.3 billion, or a 4.3% increase for education, the smallest dollar increase in 5 years, and the smallest percentage increase in 8 years, a promise made, a promise broken. On January 8, 2002, President Bush promised that, quote, America's schools will be on a new path of reform and a new path of results, and our schools will have greater resources to meet those goals, end quote. Well, now we have reform, now we have accountability plans from all 50 states, but where are the resources? The bill provides an increase of only $381 million, or 1%, over the current funding level for the No Child Left Behind Act. This is a freeze in real terms. We can provide $1 trillion in tax cuts, but at the same time, this bill doesn't even come close to meeting the funding levels in No Child Left Behind, which would require another $8 billion in fiscal year 2004, and that ain't going to happen. Got some real problems in Washington, D.C. Special education. I have mentioned I'm on the board of a school over in New Hampshire, a special ed school. What a crisis that state is having. We're seeing states all across the nation, California, for example, just melting down as a consequence of this disaster in Washington, D.C. What will be done about it, we'll see over the next year and a half here. Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. Tune back in tomorrow, same time, same place, for the Tom Hartman radio program. Thanks for joining us today.
been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
America Radio Network News. I'm Monica DeSantis. President Bush isn't pulling any punches.
My answer is bring them on. We got the force necessary to deal with the security situation.
Bush says the U.S. is well equipped to deal with the security problems in post-war Iraq. In White House comments, Bush was asked about those who are trying to disrupt the peaceful transformation of Iraq and the growing clamor to get other nations involved in reconstruction. Meanwhile, the president is optimistic about Mideast peace efforts.
We are pleased with the progress in the Middle East. I want to thank the parties in the Middle East for willing to take a risk for peace.
In White House comments, Bush expressed cautious optimism about the progress of the U.S.-backed roadmap for Mideast peace.
Vancouver.
Vancouver, Canada was chosen by the International Olympic Committee to host the 2010 Winter Olympics. A crowd in Vancouver watching the announcement via satellite burst into loud cheers and held up Canadian flags as the host city for the Games was revealed. South Korea and Austria were also competing to host the event.